man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Who Shot Ya? It's your boy, Ify Wadiway, and in the studio with me are my friends. So why don't I introduce them to you? First off, we have Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what's good?
I'll tell you what's good, Ify, and I've been meaning to talk about this for a while, and I want to give it some love. One of the things that has gotten me through the hellhole that is 2020 is a wonderful book by my good friend and mentor, Stephen Ribello, called Dolls, 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 Deep Inside Valley of the Dolls, the most beloved bad book and movie of all time. And he takes the deepest of dives into Valley of the Dolls. The writing of the novel, the casting of the film, the production, the release, the terrible reviews, the cult following, it just gets you through the whole thing. Now, Stephen, mind you, is best known for having written, the Alfred Hitchcock and the Making of Psycho book. So he comes correct. He knows his real movies, but he brings that same level of expertise and knowledge and sort of thorough background and research to the ridiculous but still beloved and amazing Valley of the Dolls. I've read it a couple times now. It's so dishy and entertaining. And, full disclosure, I'm quoted a couple of times in it and referred to as Dolls super fan in the acknowledgments, which is what I want on my tombstone now. But it's just super fun. If you've never seen Valley of the Dolls before, or if you know it by heart, you will learn things you never knew in this book. And it's just such a great ride. I highly, highly recommend it.
If people haven't seen it before, would you recommend they read the book first or after?
Well, I'd say if you were planning to do both, I'd say watch the movie. Come to it completely with a blank slate, tabula rasa, and then read the book and just find out all the dirt and dish behind it, and then you'll probably want to watch it again afterwards.
And that person teeing up a great, great, great way to watch that film is none other than Drea Clark. Drea, what's good?
Partial what's good is the real gentle stank that you're putting on everything today, Ify. you're bringing a real smooth jazz quality to your start of things, and I appreciate that.
I was thinking middle of the night jazz DJ.
Yes, for sure. This guy's gonna sneak in weird personal anecdotes and then some Coltrane. What's good with me is the majority of the cast of The Princess Bride is doing a reunion to benefit the Wisconsin Democratic Party on September 13th at 6 p.m. Central Time. You can pay whatever you want. And obviously, Wisconsin is a state that is going to be have a lot of eyes on it in the upcoming election. But also, if you've seen any of these reunions, the one that I saw and loved the best was Scott Pilgrim did one. And they did some beautiful graphic work. It was a surprisingly visual experience, and I'm hoping Princess Bride will have the same elements. But it's also such a beloved story, and seeing all of them these many years later, and my dear sweet Wallace Shawn's gonna be there. Hot ass Mandy Patinkin, and yes, I said hot ass Mandy Patinkin. So yes, but you have your Carrie Elwes, you have your Robin Wright, you got them all. Hell, Chris Sarandon's gonna be there.
Anything that makes Ted Cruz mad is automatically great, but this is great on its face anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, yeah. Anyway, September 13th, 6 p.m. Central Time, Princess Bride, Google it. Be a part. I'll be watching.
Nice. All right. And, our show always has wonderful, amazing, outstanding, phenomenal guests. And this week, no different. No different. It's always good. This week we have sociologist, author of Real Inequality, Hollywood Actors and Racism, Dr. Nancy Wong Yuen. How's it going? What's good?
He did the song to make up that your last name should be Yoon, but then he sang to like Yoon. To like
so Yoon over.
You know what, the last name thing actually reminds me, so a really good thing that I reviewed my first film ever, and that's what we're going to talk about today later, right? Mulan. And then I got on this like Rotten Tomatoes article and they totally got my name wrong.
Oh no. So,
wait, like spelling wrong?
They dropped my last name altogether. So it was just Nancy Wong. And sure. But they apologized and they contacted me and they offered to give me, you know, to let me put on my profile photo and my bio. So
my very first
film review, I'm like all legit on Rotten Tomatoes.
Nice.
All right. A silver lining.
All because they got my name wrong. So, you know, sometimes it's not terrible if people are sorry.
If I had a nickel for every Alfonso I get when being quoted from an article that has my name on it, you know, I would be
Doll super fan Alfonso Durante.
I'm going by Iffy, and people, it was so funny because people were like, oh, because I used to go by Iffy Shakude Mwadiwe. You can see if you go to my old IMDb, and like I was at some snazzy workshop and I go by Iffy anyway, so this didn't bug me, but like the agent was like, well, what do people call you? I was like, Iffy. He was like, that's your stage name, that's gonna be easy for agents to shout over the phone. I was like, all right, cool, because I go by Iffy, but also I want to be cool because, like, you know, when people are like knowing Jaimin Hanzu and you're like, yeah, hell yeah. But no, if he's cool.
She would tell Ejiofor, I think, was a big break.
Yeah. That was he paved the way. My man, she would tell.
Nancy, did you have anything else good that you were intending to say?
I did. I wanted to share that my friend Sophia Chang, she wrote The Baddest Bitch in the Room, and she founded a new program that provides free mentorship for women of color, 18 plus, in mainly TV and film, because that's, you know, she was a hip hop manager of Wu-Tang. And so, yeah, so that's going to be open and it's free. It's called Unlock Her Potential. So I think it's super, super cool.
Sweet. Man,
that's super dope.
That's awesome.
Ooh.
Yay, Iffy. Sophia Chang.
are you meaning to ask me what's good?
I think it had crossed my mind. Yes.
Yeah.
I think y'all would be aware of what my what's good's going to be since y'all got a text earlier this week.
Oh my gosh.
The coffee bar is finished. I set up. I have my pour over station. I have my mocha pot. I have an espresso machine, which was that was a whole thing because I got a frother. It was a Nespresso brand frother that I bought at the store because I went to the Nespresso store at the Americana and bawled the F out. I was like, I walked in. I was like, yeah, give me all the flavors. Give me all the flavors.
They saw you coming.
Like, give me all the flavors. What you want? Let me get the pot. Anyway, I take it home and and it wasn't working, so I had to call the Nespresso Club because I'm a member now. I'm a member of the Nespresso Club, and apparently they just replaced it. They're like, oh, you could keep the old one and get rid of that. We'll just go to the store. So I went to the store, and if y'all remember on, I think this had to be either Saturday or Sunday, but it was one of the hot days. It was 115 degrees in Glendale. I remember standing in the line and I was like, oh man. He was like, well, what are you doing? I was like, I'm just here to pick it up. And on the phone they were like, we'll put an item on your name and you can pick it up whenever. But then I told them I came to pick something up and they had it ready for me, and I was like, oh, this is service. I'm a proud member of the Nespresso Club now. So between that and meditating, I'm on a 10-day streak. Your boy is, I'm a new man. I'm gonna come out of this zen and caffeinated as fuck.
Not a combo that generally goes together, so kudos to you.
You're making it work.
Oh yeah.
That's peak Iffy right there. I'm highly caffeinated and deeply mindful.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
Zen
I can
as
feel.
Fuck.
Yeah. All right. Well, today we're going to be discussing Mulan. We're going to take a call from the Who Shot line, and of course, we're going to have our staff picks. But first, it's time for our new segment, Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a new segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? And first up, we got some changes coming to the Oscars. The Academy Awards have announced that they are implementing some groundbreaking diversity requirements for Best Picture eligibility. Some of those requirements include at least one of the lead actors or significant supporting actors is from an underrepresented racial or ethnic group, which includes Asian, Hispanic, Latinx, Black, African American, Indigenous, Native American, Alaskan Native, Middle Eastern, North African, Native Hawaiian, or other Pacific Islander, or other underrepresented race or ethnicity. At least 30% of all actors in secondary or more minor roles are from at least two of the following underrepresented groups: women, racial or ethnic groups, LGBTQ+, and people with cognitive or physical disabilities or who are deaf or hard of hearing. One of the other potential requirements is also that the main storyline's theme or narrative of the film is centered on an underrepresented group. There are also requirements when it comes to hiring creative leadership and department heads. Maintaining at least 30% of the film's crew is from an underrepresented group and paid internships for said underrepresented groups. These changes will go into full effect by 2024, which is perfect because that's when we'll finally get out of quarantine. Is this important? Do you care?
I like that this is one for me that we're all like, let me talk. Yeah. Oh my God, so much to say. Oh. One clarification before we get into it mm-hmm. that I do think is important. So there's four, they're calling them like A, B, C, and D. There's four categories. And qualifying Best Picture films just need to fulfill two of those categories. So they could have just the main storyline, theme, or narrative is centered on an underrepresented group. And like the 30% of the film's crew, but not the other things. So I think that's a big part of it. And something of note for the people who are wondering how big this change is, the Annenberg Institute, which does a lot of gauging of what representation looks like in the industry, has said that probably 95% of the 2019 films already fulfill that the sort of two out of four things. So putting that as a baseline,
I would recommend that folks go check out one of the few people I think really pays attention and writes about the Academy Awards in a way that isn't just sort of like slavering fanboy handicapping is Mark Harris. And he had a long tweet thread about how this is basically, while it is well-intentioned and there are certainly good things that can come out of it, this kind of feels like another way of the Academy like helping studios and screwing over indies, because it's very easy for studios to have, say, a really ethnically diverse marketing division or paid internships, which smaller companies, you know, are dealing with fewer people, and it's going to be harder for them to try and like kind of meet these the percentages of what they're talking about. He also points out, though, that unlike other recent attempts to sort of change things up, like their whole most, you know, best popular movie or whatever, that they're giving themselves 3 years to kind of figure this out and sort of walk through it and figure out what's this going to look like, what are the implications, how does this work. So, you know, ideally they'll answer the trickier questions, but, you know, I would recommend checking out, he's at Mark Harris NYC on Twitter, and I think he lays out a lot of really interesting groundwork about the upsides and downsides of this.
I know, yeah, I think my thing is just more the cursory thing. I mean, when you get down to the nitty gritty, there's lots of negatives, but it is blowing me away, the people tripping over themselves to by people, I mean white people. By white people, I mean Justine Bateman, who tweeted, "Honestly, I never want to be hired for these reasons ever." Oh, you mean daughter of famed person who worked in film, sister of very popular film person. And it never lights me up more then when a white person was like, "I never want to be hired from my race." It was like, "Oh, that's why you've been hired your whole career." like honestly, you better be the tightest fucking actor when you say some shit like that. Because if you're not coming in and you're not hitting the LeBron shots in your career, then guess what? You probably made it that far. Because we've seen time and time again, we've mentioned sons of famed directors who've been able to fail upward with movie, and the only successful movie they were the one that co-wrote with someone, and that happened to be the only movie where you hired a black person. That being said,
not that you have anything specific.
No, yeah, yeah, and I'm not talking about any one specific.
Making up a, yeah. Well, what we've always said whenever this topic comes up is that, like, the Academy Awards are the other, the far end of the assembly line, and that the real changes that are going to be made have to be at the other end of it. And I think this is the Academy trying to be like, well, look, we don't run a studio, we don't hire people, we don't make the decisions of what films get made and who makes them. This is the one thing we control. So what we can control is trying to create these, you know, minimum barriers, these standards by which, you know, movies will be recognized. But you know, I think the 3-year gap is going to be very helpful in kind of ironing out what they really mean. Like, one of the things Mark Harris points out is, you know, once whether their decision about whether or not Jews count in all this is going to play a huge role in how this gets perceived and what it even means. Somebody else said, yeah, but Green Book would still count under these rules. You know, I mean, like, so there's a lot to look yeah. at here. I commend the notion of it. I'm sorry,
that they're getting the rules, though. It's not like they're inventing it from scratch, right? So BAFTA has already had, sorry, did I say that right? The British,
the BFI, yeah.
of the Academy. Yeah, so they have these rules in place already. So it's they're getting it from a place that's already worked. Hmm. And I think that it's, you know, it is, yeah, exactly. It's the Academy is at the tail end. They're not inventing, but this is an amazing way to encourage studios that are, you know, going to be making films. And majority of the, so, you know, the difference between indie and, yeah, that's a big deal. You know, a lot of the indies, though, that do make it through tend to be more diverse, which is interesting, you know, that in terms of the Academy consideration. So I just wonder, like, how much is going to change, like, you know, Drea said that it's 95% already qualify. So I think it's the United States is very hesitant to do any kind of quota system. They're very against this. But I think that if Hollywood is really going to take diversity seriously, I think this is a good first step.
I do. I sounded critical because it's not necessarily this, because they've put it out themselves as it being groundbreaking. And I don't know how much ground it will be breaking, but I do think it's an important first step. And on the film festival side of it, Alonzo can also speak to this. For I've seen in place, like, when you put in not quota, there's something so ugly about quota because it does give that tokenization idea of the films that are selected. But when you put just a goal in mind or a mission for a festival that we really want to embrace having directors of color, female directors, we want to have this on-screen stuff, it changes it. And until you're doing that, the other thing that I hope that comes out of this is, because they're going to need to be collecting information and parsing it in ways they haven't before, we might have access to numbers. And all of the numbers we ever get, like the DGA numbers, are a dead bummer. Like, they're always a bummer. But the more numbers we can have that illustrate just how segregated the departments are, the industry is, studios versus indies, I think those are also helpful for making points along the way.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about Mulan just as soon as we hear from another show from Maximum Fun. See you in a bit.
I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And together, we host a podcast called Still Buffering, where we answer questions like,
why should I not fall asleep first at a slumber party?
How do I be fleek?
Is it okay to break up with someone using emojis?
And sometimes we talk about butts.
No, we don't. Nope.
Find out the answers to these important questions and many more on Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages.
I am a teenager.
And I was too. Butts, 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 butts.
No. Will you change your mind?
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Sophie Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Nancy Wong Yoon,
Alonzo Duralde.
And today we're talking about Mulan. Drea, would you mind providing us with a synopsis?
Sure. So in rural imperial China, where this takes place, we meet, we're in a very small remote village with a loving young family who has two girls, one much more rambunctious than the other. This is young Mulan. We see her sort of being a very physical, active child and kind of shushed down. And that comes into play even more when she goes through puberty, becomes of marriageable age. And her father has encouraged her in her learning to be athletic and a fighter, but she needs to kind of restrain herself. However, all of those skills she picked up in her own pursuits are put into play when the emperor calls for one man from every family to join the army to protect him in a new onslaught from bad guys that include an incredible witch. And because the only man in their family is their aging father with a terrible knee, Mulan sneaks out, steals his armor, and joins the army as a boy, where she trains and grows and battles ensue. She has a ragtag motley crew of dudes around her, dwarf style, like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, not like little people. Not a great addition to my synopsis, but they're there. Yeah, so she grows as a warrior, and you guys, she might actually learn a little something about herself along the way. Just saying, she might. That's my I guess it's not maybe. Really a spoiler to say she does not stay disguised as a dude the whole time.
Well, which leads me to my first Nancy Andrea question is, thoughts on going into battle with hair undone?
Oh my god. It's such a good, funny question.
That is a good question. I mean, it was a symbolic moment. It wasn't practical.
It was also, I had this, because not only does she take her hair out and like rides in, it's like delicately curled. And so in my head, I was like, did they justify those curls? Because sometimes your hair curls if you keep it like wound up in a bun or something. Because I I was honestly.
No, it does. My hair actually looks exactly like that when I have it in a bun.
And to me, I did sort of justify that moment. Also, I hate working out with my hair down so much. I'm grossed out when I see other people do it. So I like that you asked that, Alonso.
It reminds me of when they gave Batwoman like high heels. And it's like,
oh yeah,
I don't.
Mulan did have a lot of sensible. She did have a lot of sensible fight garments, and
in line.
And she has the chi, which allows her to see past her own hair.
That's true.
No problem.
There we go.
Yeah. That's
we
true.
Part of the superpower collection.
Yeah.
Yes.
But how do we feel this stacks up against all the other Disney live action remakes? Because I've heard people say this has been the best one so far, and I will agree.
So I have a question. I've never seen the animated Mulan.
Me neither.
Oh.
Okay. Because I thought I'd seen them all. And then this started and I was like, I feel like I'm sure because it came out when I was sort of babysitting age. So it was probably playing for kids. But then I looked and I'm like, oh, there's like this came out in the whole like I didn't see between like Pocahontas all the way to The Emperor's New Groove. There's like six films. Yeah, I never saw Hercules. Like,
I never saw Treasure Planet.
I never saw The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Like
yeah, those are all. Yeah, I've seen all of those. Mulan is one that not only I've seen, but it's also Naomi's.
If he was
one
a child when these came out.
Yeah, it's one of Naomi's favorites.
So going back to Iffy's question, because it is a good one, and I actually have also not watched a ton of these remakes. How was this for any of you who've seen both or maybe just seen other remakes?
I've seen both. I've seen both Aladdin. I did see Lion King, which I described as I was riding Danny Fernandez's coattails, was able to go to the premiere. And when I said it was good, someone was like, oh, you just have that premiere thing because you were in the room with the people that made it seem better.
And there was a nice spread.
Yeah. And then upon hearing that, I was like, oh, yeah, I think they were right. You give me some free food, your movie will be fantastic. Let it be known, PR teams.
So, Nancy, you've seen both, right?
Yeah.
I've seen both, and I've seen both Aladdin's, both Lion King's, both Beauty and the Beast. And it's definitely better than those. Yeah, for sure. Because Beauty and the Beast, like, I really like the original. And the live action felt really really horrible, actually, because the whole story of her going to be imprisoned with a man who kidnapped is so much worse when you see actual people doing it.
Yeah, I can't get started on Beauty and the Beast. It sets the worst standards in terms of, like, he's different when it's just the two of us. Girls, young girls should not
syndrome
be watching
is really bad. Yeah, it's really bad. But there's a difference between, like, the cartoon where it feels fantastical, and then when you see it in person, like actual people embodying those roles, there's a jump, right? There's a jump in, this could be like me. People see themselves in animation as well. Yeah. That's actually how the original Mulan, so many girls who grew up in that era, Asian American girls, saw themselves for the first time in Mulan. It's a princess film, right? Remember, it's like, you know, it's like Beauty and the Beast. It's like Jasmine and Aladdin. There's a whole industry, right? Where girls dress up for Halloween and they literally become that princess. And I think that Mulan, even the animation, the fact that she was a warrior and that she saves China, that was a big difference between her and those previous princesses.
Yeah, as somebody who's seen a lot of the remakes, I think it works really well. I mean, what's interesting is that it is the least... It is actually not at all committed to being a musical, which is the issue that the other ones deal with. You know, like Beauty and the Beast goes full on with the songs. Jungle Book at least kind of weaves them in a little bit, but not to the extent that the original, you know, cartoon does. But this one, no songs, no, there's like a wisecracking dragon, right? That Eddie Murphy voices in the cartoon. Is that right? None of that.
That's right.
So like, yeah, they're like making this a straight up kind of wuxia, you know, gloriously CG amplified, you know, action movie. And so I think on that front, it works just because it knows what it is and it's very comfortable in what it is. And because it's also, it revolves around these human characters, you don't have to deal with Lion King, like what a cartoon singing warthog is not the same as a digitally rendered realistic singing warthog, because it's still a warthog. Like, these are people, these characters were always people, but now we're just, you know, maybe even if their abilities are beyond what mere mortals can do, it's not beyond what you've seen people do in, you know, Peking Opera Blues or, you know, any of these kind of like movies where fierce warrior women with, you know, wires you can't see are defying gravity and, you know, kicking swords and whatever.
For me, because I have a total love of wuxia films in general, and I was doing such more of a comparison to films that I love, everything from, like, you know, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon to Red Cliff. Like, there's such a range of those. And this was so much more epic, and I wasn't expecting it to be as beautiful as it was. I think that Mandy Walker, the cinematographer, did an incredible job. I loved the fight scenes. Actually, there were a few, especially the smaller ones, where I thought there was some really inventive camera work to kind of put you in her place, and the sort of the bodily autonomy she had as a fighter. It's such a particular thing, this idea of wuxia fighting and the wire work that it contains. And what I didn't expect was, when this started, and, you know, and it's probably why my summary was so much, I found so many similarities to Jane Austen in this. Like, to me, her family and the idea of, oh, the daughters, that your purpose is to be feminine and that you have to get married and that's it. And if you're acting outside of those confines, it's unacceptable.
And you're violating your duty to your family.
Yes. And the idea of, like, the honor of what you're supposed to be doing to uphold that. And obviously in Austen, it's dealing more with sort of a landed gentry, and there's a whole different hierarchy. But there was I was not expecting what a bummer universality reminder that girls across the world were measured on how feminine they were, how marriageable they were. Do you know what I mean? So it was a nice pathway that I wasn't expecting to find that.
I would like, Nancy, I would love your thoughts about, I mean, this is a movie that is, it's a Disney movie, and it is written and directed by non-Asian people, and it is set firmly in the dynastic period of China. Did it feel like cultural tourism, or did it feel like they were really telling the story the way that, you know, that didn't clang to somebody who's more familiar with the cultural context, say?
Yeah, that's a good question. I had a lot of thoughts watching it, and I've seen on social media a lot of people. I think the general consensus is that it could have been better. So for the whole kind of sexism across the globe, I actually felt like, I don't know, when there was a scene where the young Mulan does this incredible, actually it's the opening scene, it does this incredible kind of gymnastics, acrobatic, you know, wuxia stuff. And the village kind of looks at her askance, you know, they're like, oh, what is she doing that? Like, I feel like I've never seen that in a Chinese movie before, where if someone is awesome in martial arts, everyone's like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. Like, yeah. Women in martial arts doing well is actually very common. I mean, that's not talking about historicity, whatever, right? Historically, sure. I don't know. But I'm actually talking about Chinese movies set in the past, right? During sure. that era. And I've just never seen that before. So everyone around me, we all thought that was unrealistic, actually, and the whole kind of like the patriarchy. So I actually read the original Ballad of Mulan, which is a 6th century poem that this is based on. It's very short. Dude, don't think I did some sort of like encyclopedic.
It's actually quite short.
It's very, very short.
And it's all translated. I didn't even read it in its original. and the family actually sees her off to battle. So there is no sexism, which is crazy, right? So it's like, I felt like this, you know, 21st century Hollywood film is making the family and village more patriarchal than the actual 6th century original source. So
mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's crazy. But that's great
because one of my issues with the movie is that, you know, I was kind of rooting for her to, like, become an apprentice to the witch because it's like, why are you fighting so hard for this empire that is crushing you?
Yeah.
That, you know, like, she is literally giving, you know, like, risking her life on behalf of the patriarchy that doesn't even welcome her as one of their ranks. And it's kind of like, Mulan you deserve too. Better. Yeah, like, yeah. You're more powerful
the sequel.
Than that. Yeah.
The sequel, she finds all the other eagle sorceresses and,
yeah, yes.
And gives up on the empire.
I will watch that. Sign me up.
So there are a couple of controversies, you know, that the film has been dealing with. Nancy, walk us through this one, because, like, the lead actress, you know, who plays Mulan, whose name I'm probably going to butcher unless you wanted to say it for me.
Louis Faye.
Thank you. You know, several months back, tweeted her support of the Hong Kong police against the pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong, and people got very upset about that, and were sort of calling for boycotts of the film. Do celebrities in China have the liberty of standing up to the government, or is that just not feasible there for various reasons of the way the government is set up there? Like, are we looking through this at this through a filter that it doesn't take into account the realities of life there?
I just feel like she could have said nothing. I can't imagine that they would have to force her to say.
I don't know. That's
pro Communist Party.
I'm so sorry. I'm nervous because I just the little I know about it is around Fan Bingbing, who went through so much of a whole, which I encourage you to read on because it's crazy, but. Yeah, I don't know. To me, I'm like, oh, they must have made her. But I might just be saying that because I like to think that people would have more sympathy in them than her tweeting that at that moment. But you're right. I'm clueless.
I mean, I honestly don't know. That's why I'm sort of asking, like, are we assuming that movie stars there have the same liberty here to kind of mouth off about whatever they want to here? Or is it more a thing of like, if you want to have a career, you will, you know, do and say X, Y, Z.
I mean, the truth is Donnie Yen also actually supports the Communist Party. So a lot of them do. I actually think Gong Li maybe is not also without fault. You know, I mean, I think they've all probably said things at one point or another. So I think in that sense that perhaps all Chinese actors in China. So this is, you know, Chinese actors are in the diaspora, but these particular ones that work in China.
Right.
I would imagine that there is pressure, but I think that. For her to, I mean, she's pretty fairly young and has a young career. For her to come out so early in the film, you know, to do that, it's it really was very, it really was not a good look for her or for the movie. And yeah. I think legitimately, I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen, but now it's been shown that the movie was actually filmed in Xinjiang, which is where the Uyghur Muslims are imprisoned. And right, so, yeah. And then there was actually a thanks to the authorities that actually are imprisoning them in the movie at the end. And so this is not just, I mean, this is pro Communist Party on many levels. Right. And so the boycott Mulan, I think, is a legitimate hashtag and movement, because this is, you know, this is a huge deal. And it's like, I feel so kind of torn, because I totally, you know, the politics are such a reality. These are lives, you know, these are actual lives, people dying. And then there's, of course, you know, Asian American representation. Like you said, that's seeing Tai Ma, seeing Rosalind Chow, like actually being a huge Disney movie when they've been, you know, kind of working in the industry forever and working so hard to kind of make a name for themselves. And it's just, it's sad to see that we're in this position where I think the bottom line is, literally the bottom line is the China market, right?
Right.
And Disney not really taking a stance at all because they want that money.
Yeah.
And so it's a moral conundrum, and also, yeah, and moral, so many different kind of moral layers.
I don't know who it was that said there is no ethical consumption in capitalism, but it's like, I think if we really start breaking down, like, where our clothes come from and where our food comes from, mm-hmm. and where everything else, like, everything's connected to something horrible. And the Walt Disney Company is not going to be the first to walk away from whatever horrible thing there is.
Yeah, they definitely are not.
Yeah. All right. Well, then let's go ahead and get that vote going.
What are we voting on?
So we use there are three picks you can have: screen it, stream it, or skip it. Normally, when we can go to theaters, screen it means you go watch it on the big screen. Stream it means you wait for it to come to streaming, and skip it means you skip the whole dang old thing. We'll let Dre kick it off so you can see how one does it. And then we'll do Nancy, Alonzo, and then I'll close it out.
Awesome. So, yeah, again, the screen it is a sort of, it's a stand-in, because I don't actually recommend people going to the theaters right now.
Please don't.
For all of the problematic areas, I really enjoyed this. I thought it was so beautiful to watch. I loved her story. I really liked her as a heroine. So this is a screen it for me. I was, maybe it's condescending to say it looks so much better than I thought it would, but literally every single visual, the production design is so consistent and so beautiful. The visuals are amazing. I loved her goofy group of soldier friends. I loved, there's this recurring phoenix motif that has been incorporated in literature and film forever, and I thought was used really well here. So yeah, for me, it's a screen it. I enjoyed it.
Oh, gosh. When I wrote the review, I was a screen it. And then with the whole kind of Uyghur Muslim, I'm like, oh, I don't know. So I think it's actually interesting, because screen it would be paying the $29.99 premium.
True.
But if you already have Disney Plus, you can wait till December 4th and just stream it and not pay that $29.99. Right? And then
true.
Of course, skip it. Don't subscribe to Disney Plus. So I think I don't know. I think depending on the person, where they are morally, how they feel. But in terms of just the content, I would say for sure at least stream it.
Yeah, I would say not bringing ideology into it, and if you want to skip it on that reason, more power to you. I totally understand that sentiment. This is, and I think this may have come up with me before, where I think this is it's a stream it that I wish you could screen. Like, it's a stream it for me in terms of, like, I think it medium works, and there's a lot that I like about it, although I think it's also has its flaws. But I this was originally intended to be a theatrical release, and Disney ultimately decided not to go that route. But if in some future time, when it is safe to go back to theaters again, and say they decide to have a Fathom Events where they're going to show it for one night, it would be cool to see this projected, because I think this is, like Dre says, beautifully put together. The action sequences are really stirring and wonderfully choreographed. I would like to see this movie on a big screen, but by our standards of the sort of tripartite rating system, I will say stream it.
Mm. For me, it's very interesting because with me, I was originally just kind of in the stream it lane, mostly because like it feels like it was trying to be like the movie it was trying to be was kind of filtered through the Disney lens, and that kind of watered it down. And I think I felt that in a lot of portions, even though a lot of the sequences were really great. I felt like, man, it makes me mad that I know how good this can be and this. And I think, you know, I was going to sit there, and then I heard, you know, Nancy and I, we were having that great conversation. And then I learned that like we're thanking, you know, the Ugar Autonomy Region Committee in the credits. And that's just a step too far. And I'm going to have to stand with the boycott Mulan folks and nice. Say, skip it. It's not tight enough for you to do it. Like, you know, I've definitely there will be things that will be good enough that'll make you go against your wishes, like Kanye's early work up until about Life of Pablo, his shoe releases, his clothes that he released, naming your comedy album after him. Like, you might make some mistakes like that, but then you go back and you're like, oh, this slaps though, and he actually was doing something. This movie does not slap. This movie is pretty okay, and it doesn't quite reach the potential of what it can be. And I think everyone did a fantastic job, but I think if truly getting that like hands off Disney, we would have gotten something really good. So go ahead and skip it and support the boycott Mulan movement.
I love it. I love it. I love that we're giving all the choices, because that's exactly how I feel. All these choices I felt at different points.
Each one as good as the next.
Well, you know what also is good? The Who Shot line, which we will hear when we come back after hear from another show on Maximum Fun.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my friend's favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
I'm Judge John Hodgman. You're hearing the voices of real litigants, real people who have submitted disputes to my internet court at the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I hear their cases, I ask them questions, they're good ones, and then I tell them who's right and who's wrong.
Thanks to Judge John Hodgman's ruling, my dad has been forced to retire one of the worst dad jokes of all time.
Instead of cutting his own hair with a Flowbee, my husband has his hair cut professionally.
I have to join a community theater group.
And my wife has stopped bringing home wild animals.
It's the Judge John Hodgman podcast. Find it every Wednesday at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Thanks, Judge John Hodgman.
Welcome back to Who Shot You. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Nancy Wong Yoon,
Drea Clark.
And now it's time to answer a call from the Who Shot line. Casey, can you do me a big favor? Play that call.
Hi, Who Shot You. I have a problem. I am a philosophy professor who is supervising a graduate student writing a syllabus for a philosophy and science fiction class. And she wants to have her students watch a bunch of movies that are getting them to think about the nature of truth and reality. And a lot of her movies, most of her movies, have a lot of white dudes at the center of them. Think The Matrix and Eternal Sunshine. We are looking for more diverse movies to get her students to engage with science fiction and think about the nature of truth and reality. Couldn't think of a better group to ask this question. Can you give us some recommendations? Thanks so much. Love the show.
Well, The Matrix was directed by two trans women, let's not forget.
And but Keanu, I hear you. Yes, Keanu is often not acknowledged for being part of Asian American actors, but is. As you guys know, I feel like everyone's going to expect me to say this, and I will. Annihilation immediately came to mind for me.
Ditto.
I love this movie. Natalie Portman, Gina Rodriguez, Tessa Thompson, and sweet Jennifer Jason Leigh, along with Oscar. Oh, help me,
Isaac.
Thank you, Isaac. Oscar Isaac. I'm like the hot one. Yes. So Annihilation, and then using Oscar Isaac as a portal, I'd say Deus Ex Machina.
No, Ex Machina.
Ex Machina. I wanted it to be Deus Ex. But yes, Alex Garland's film Ex Machina with Alicia Vikander and Oscar Isaac and Domhnall Gleeson would also be in there. I have some others, but they aren't as science fiction-y.
Yeah.
If we add to that, Devs, I don't know if they're doing TV, but Devs is the same director and has an Asian American woman and man in it. And it's actually totally about life and death and reality. It's incredible.
Nice.
Ooh.
If you guys haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. It's on Hulu.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is super not my genre, and I think sadly this is an area in which the films that have been made on this topic sadly tend to be dominated by white dudeness. So like there isn't a ton that was leaping to mind for me besides Annihilation, and like, you know, do they have to be movies? Like, can we talk about the novels of Octavia Butler? You know, like there was, you know, because I would love to hear if any, you know, if you got anything.
I'm trying to think of ways you can maybe expand this so that it could reach, you know, different areas. Like, you know, what I'm thinking of is like, truth, if you're thinking of truth and reality, you can play with it, especially with a lot of Jordan Peele's movies. Like if you think of Get Out, like the truth of the film and the reality of it, and just the ways that he almost plays with the human expectation and how it goes. I constantly bring up how he had to argue with the marketing team because they wanted to reveal the key scene, which is the biggest reveal in the movie. And it's the thing I like about that reveal is that it should have been, you should have known, but the only reason is because you perceive this white woman as safe. And that's why she doesn't do anything to make you think he's on his side. She's constantly kind of going against him, not on his side, even when he wants to leave early on in the movie. She's not listening to him in the interaction with the cop. Like, she's constantly going against this man. But up until that point, until she pretty much says she's on his side, we have perceived her as safe. And I think that can open a very large discussion too with a lot of the black students and just how and just an open discussion of like the world today, because I think that's the problem we're having is, you know, the idea of like what is the truth versus like what is reality, because people view the world differently. You have people who've grown up watching police, if you were to ask everyone, do you think that the police have the right to kill bad guys? I think we'd be surprised by how many people would say yes, because we've grown up seeing that. So that how can you even have a conversation about police brutality when you have a group of people that believe that cops should be able to kill whoever they perceive as bad?
Are you trying to get a college credit for this one?
I would like it.
It'd
make my dad very proud, but
I was just going to sort of follow what you were saying before about how there's ones that aren't science fiction that maybe kind of fit more in this category.
Like, I didn't know we were looking at sci-fi, so most of my list is not sci-fi. Ooh.
Yeah, I like, you know, a movie I brought up on a recent episode was Celine and Julie Go Boating, which, you know, like it's directed by Jacques Rivette, but all the women in the film co-wrote it. And it very much plays with the notion of what's real and what isn't and what is dreamt and, the topics like that, but not through a sci-fi filter.
Yeah. I think there's such a long history of most, and these are white women's stories, but like if you go back to Persona, the Ingmar Bergman, there's so much there about identity and truth and reality.
Altman's Three Women.
Yes. I would put Mulholland Drive in that. I would put, Kurosawa's Rashomon, I think would be a good thing in terms of just, it's a basic level of how we're telling stories and what's true for one person is maybe not true from the person seeing it from another angle.
Can I add mine to that quickly to Rashomon? Yeah. I thought of Burning, which is not sci-fi, but Burning is similar to Rashomon.
That's
in that
great.
Perspective and then creating realities in your mind.
There's a Paul Bartel short film that he made in the 1960s called The Secret Cinema, which he then remade for the TV show Amazing Stories. And it is very kind of Truman Show, but it's with a female protagonist. And it's basically this woman who is convinced that she is being secretly filmed, that all of the sort of indignities and embarrassments that happened to her have been scripted by someone else, and it's for the amusement of this secret audience. And it turns out she's right.
Dun, dun, dun.
So we hope that helps.
I hope that answers what she says. But she's not wrong that when you look at, if you think about immediately, you're like, oh yeah, The Matrix, Interstellar. Like there's so many films,
the 13th dudes.
Floor. Like there's so many. And every single one of them, you're like, man, why am I always, it's always following a white dude. Every single one of them.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, thank you to everyone who has called in. Please continue to do so. Our well is drying up. From the words of the super producer, Casey O'Brien, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY-803-1664. I think even find some friends. Next time your friend asks you a question about a movie, stop them. Tell them to call the Who Shot line, and then play the episode for them after we answer.
Good.
That is your mission if you choose to accept it,
or steal our answers and just tell them you thought of them.
And sound
yeah, that too.
I'm comfortable with that.
All right, now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all, from anywhere. Nancy, why don't you start?
So this is really old, but I just watched Roman Holiday again. Ooh. And someone told me that there was a re-release, a redigitization September 15th on Twitter. So I don't know. Yes? Exciting.
Paramount Home Entertainment is putting out a new Blu-ray as part of a series they've been doing of like their classic films. So yeah, perfect timing. And there's an interview with Leonard Maltin making its way around the internet right now, talking with one of the people involved with making the film. So your timing is excellent.
So cool. Yeah, well, I just thought that's a great princess movie. That was a really great princess movie. And it holds up still. Like, there was nothing in it that was problematic. And you know, in this time of not being able to go anywhere, you can take a Roman Holiday yourself. I actually, you know, the Mouth of Truth, where you stick your hand in. I did that in Rome because of that movie. And of it was course. Just, you know, it's like, it kind of makes your whole kind of, I don't know, it was my foray into Europe, and just watching it now again is just beautiful. And Audrey Hepburn is just gorgeous.
Oh,
and Gregory Peck too.
So mine ties in with a woman in a patriarchal society who has talents that the only way that she is able to pursue them and to live up to her own the excellence that she has within her is to pass herself as a man. And it also ties back to Drea's earlier comment regarding hot ass Mandy Patinkin, and that would be Yentl.
Nice.
The Barbara Streisand's directorial debut based on the story by Isaac Bashevis Singer. She plays a young woman who is a brilliant potential Talmudic scholar in an era in which that field of study has been forbidden to women. And so after her father dies, she cuts her hair and pretends to be a boy, and complications ensue. I really love this movie. It's a great metaphor for queerness in so many ways. Like, No Matter What Happens is a coming out anthem. Fight me on that one. And again, as with Mulan, I think, you know, she is unfortunately giving her talents to a patriarchy that does not appreciate her and does not want her greatness, although she does eventually, I guess, move past that. But anyway, I thought about Yentl a lot while watching Mulan. Of course, I think about Yentl a lot because that's just my Jones as a gay man. But anyway, if you've never seen it, it's a delight. Yentl.
Okay, my pick for this week is inspired by Mulan and the Dreamboat Donnie Yen, Ip Man. If you haven't seen it, Ip Man is the 2008 film. It's the first in the series. It is, I've heard it's like a 50% biography of the actual Ip Man, who was Bruce Lee's mentor, and that's the character Donnie Yen plays. So it's, you know, sort of like fantastical, but it is incredible fight scenes. I love just well choreographed and well filmed fight scenes, and they're pretty entrancing. And it is shockingly on Netflix, which surprised the toot out of me. So, yeah.
There's like Ip Man. Four of these movies entirely, right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
It's a popular series.
So making... Who Shot You history. The second time in a few weeks, Drea Clark has snatched up a staff pick that I was going to do.
So
this was going to be my staff pick, and I was going to go into it by saying, you know, I like to find people from the movie we're watching and talk about movies they've done. So I was going to do Ip Man. So because that was taken, I guess I go see the one. I don't want to say Romeo Must Die. Go see the one. It's like Highlander, but with martial arts. So
if you want more Gong Li, there's a brand new Blu-ray of Shanghai Triad being released in high def in North America for the first time.
Yeah, that's my next one. So as you've known, my physical media chase has all been anime, and yes. It's going to flip now to just martial arts movies. That's my next one. It's going to kick it off with Ong Bak the Goat. Ong Bak, people will try and tell you UFC put Muay Thai on the map. No, it was Ong Bak and then Chocolate. Solid. But yeah, I'm definitely going to buy that. So I can't believe it. Me and Drea, two in a row.
You know what? I mean,
the day me and Alonzo fall on one, the day that comes, I'm going to scream out of pure happiness and pride in myself. So just know it's coming. It's probably going to end up being a Christmas movie. All right. Now it's time for our 5-star reviews. If you leave us a 5-star review, we'll read it on the air. As simple as that. Do you want to hear your Apple iTunes name set on the air? Do you want to? I mean, like, you know, I'm not going to encourage this, but there's a way you can sneak a shout out in there. But, you know, please don't do that. Now I've revealed the secret. Your chances to do that was before I said that. This one's from Mary Frelling Christmas.
I don't know what that means, but I love it.
Yeah. Love these three and they're excellent guests. That's you, Nancy. Very lively and likable. Short, sweet, straight to the point.
I love it. We'll take it. Thank you.
That was a great Frelling review.
Yeah. It was. Nancy, thank you so much for joining us. Do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Plug. Well, I wrote a book, Real Inequality, Hollywood Actors and Racism, and it'll help you understand why Hollywood is racist. I actually hope that everybody in the industry, especially given this new Oscar diversity stuff, you know, get to know why and all the thoughts that you've had that you've perpetuated all of your life has actually been racist. So.
I love it. You know, we'll have to make sure we take the photo so people can see what the book looks like, because that has been your virtual background and I have no choice but to stand. You'd love to see it. I love it. If you'd like to support the show, please visit MaximumFun.org/join. Again, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY 803-1664. You know, and look, like Casey has said, the wells are running dry. Okay, we have some DAC that's dry ass calls. We want to get some WAC that's wet ass calls. No. So we need you. We need you to fill summer. That well. Yeah, yeah.
Please leave some questions so he never says that again.
I'll leave one for next time. Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot Your Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/Who Shot Your Podcast, or send us an email at whoshotya@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.